Assalamu alaikum and hello and welcome, dear viewers, to Spotlight Middle East. I'm your host, Farah Atwe. In the latest development of the armed crisis in Syria, the Zionist regime fighters' jets violated the Syrian airspace and bombarded a research center near the capital city of Damascus on Wednesday. The Israeli attack drew criticism not only from Syria's key regional ally Iran, but also from its adversary Turkey. In a comment on the airstrike, Turkish Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan said on Sunday that Israel has a mentality of waging state terrorism. Right now, there is no telling what it might do or where it might do it. On the other hand, the Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Saad Jalili, condemned the raid, saying that the Zionist regime of Tel Aviv will regret attacking Syria. Meanwhile, the head of the Syrian opposition, Al-Khatib, and from the security conference held in Munich, had expressed readiness, let's say, for talks with Syria's vice president, Farouk al-Sharra, to discuss the ongoing crisis in the country. He had added that there are basic conditions before holding talks with the Syrian officials over the crisis in the Arab country, even though the so-called Syrian National Coalition and foreign-backed opposition groups have insisted that Bashar al-Assad step down before any negotiation can be taken place. Now, of course, however, Tehran, Moscow and Damascus have repeatedly cited diplomacy as the only solution to ending the crisis in the country. Joining us in the studio, Dr. Marlah, a political analyst, to speak with us more about the topic. But before that, we will watch a report that would summarize today's episode. We will be right back.
In the latest development of the armed crisis in Syria, the Zionist regime's fighter jets violated the Syrian airspace and bombarded a research center near the capital city of Damascus on Wednesday. According to a statement issued by the Syrian army, Israeli fighter jets carried out a direct strike on the research center in Jamraya in the early hours of the day, killing two people and injuring five others. Also on Thursday, Syria called on the Security Council to issue a clear condemnation of the flagrant Israeli attack on the territories of a sovereign state and the Israeli violation of the UN Charter, the international law, the Agreement on Disengagement in 1974, and the relevant UNSC resolution. Meanwhile, the Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Saeed Jalili, condemned the raid, saying that the Zionist regime of Tel Aviv will regret attacking Syria. In a meeting with Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Saeed Jalili, on Sunday, Assad commented for the first time on the recent airstrike on Jamraya, saying the attack has exposed Tel Aviv's collaboration with foreign-backed insurgents. The Syrian president said his country's military was able to confront current threats and aggression against Syria. Turkey had a stance after the attack. Turkish Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan has condemned the recent Israeli airstrike on a research center near the Syrian capital of Damascus. "Those who have been treating Israel like a spoiled child should expect anything from them at any time," Erdogan said at a press conference in Istanbul on Sunday. Meanwhile, the head of the so-called Syrian National Coalition, Ahmed Maaz al-Khatib, and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov have met for the first time on the sidelines of the Munich Security Conference in Germany. The meeting came a day after Khatib said the Syrian opposition bloc was ready to negotiate with the Syrian government. He said the government should release prisoners as a gesture of goodwill in exchange for talks. Before the meeting with Khatib, Lavrov met with the U.S. Vice President Joe Biden and UN Arab League Special Representative for Syria, Lakhdar Brahimi, to talk about ways to end the nearly 2 years of unrest in the country.
Hello and welcome to our program, Dr. Mohsen Al-Saleh. As the report actually implies, we're speaking about the Syrian crisis, specifically about the Israeli attack on Syria. But the beginning, Dr. Bashar Assad government is still holding on despite the increasing tension, if we might say, and the increasing pressure by foreign countries on Syria. One can actually wonder here, what's really behind the steadfastness and readiness among the Syrian soldiers that is allowing them to be handling all that pressure that's been happening from 22 months up till this moment? And what has this stability in defending their own country proving on the regional basis?
Assalamu alaikum wa al-mushahideen al-kiram. First and foremost, it's been shown that this regime is very strong. And the Syrian people and the Syrian army are well aware of this conspiracy against the whole Syria, not only against the regime. Against Syria because of its position from the Palestinian issue. Against Syria because of the Syria's steadiness, as you mentioned, behind supporting the resistance in Lebanon and in Palestine.
Yes.
And its relation, invariable relation with the Islamic Republic in Iran, and from the beginning till now. And Syria stopped against any kind of American or Israeli invasion to Iraq or to any Arab or Islamic territories, whatever. Under Saddam, even they were contradicting Saddam in many issues, but they did not give a blank check to the Americans to go to Iraq and cripple and ruin this this country. Now we come back to Syria. As we mentioned, is very strong in terms of its doctrine, in terms of its ideology, and in terms of the homogeneity in the big issues. But some of the Arab countries, like of course Qatar and Saudi Arabia, they went on with the Israeli and the American planning for the region regarding Greater Middle East, to divide the countries according to the tribal, national, sectarian backgrounds. And because they failed, really, to summarize, because they failed through 2 years from crippling the movement of Syria because of their help to the resistance in Lebanon, especially in 2006, when the resistance in Lebanon achieved one of the most good battles and victorious results in the battle against the Israeli and the American, and actually the most of the European countries because of the Syrian backing of the of the resistance.
Okay.
So now Syria probably is going to go through sometimes of battles here and there, but Syria was capable of really overcome all these conspiracies, all these plannings. And really the issue here is that started in Lebanon, went to Gaza, and now Syria. Because they failed in Lebanon 2006, because they failed in Gaza 2012 even, and 8 and 9, and now they go back to Syria. But since Syria is going to be the last battle for protecting the rights of the Arabs to exist in this world.
And to defend their countries.
And to defend their country. So that's why we see now Maad al-Khatib talking about a kind of dialogue.
Yes.
That's true conditions, but these are easy
okay.
conditions.
Of course, you would be able to discuss them throughout.
Here we come yes. to the Israeli aggression against the research mm-hmm. centers for scientific purposes and for scientific aims. And I guess the Israelis, they want to send a message, mm-hmm. clear message, that they talk about chemical and they talk about missiles,
yes.
anti-craft or anti-planes. They talk about all this, mm-hmm. but we know that. Any side, any resistance in this region would like to prove that they can really having a position, having an attitude towards the Palestinian issue, they wanna try to ruin it, try to strike it. The Israelis, in this meaning, in this context, try to tell the Syrians, okay, you have really come out victorious in mm-hmm. this battle inside, financed, armed
okay.
by the Arabs and by the Americans, and now the Israelis coming to tell that the Syrians, okay, you want to go out, we still having something to do with you,
okay.
we're gonna strike all powerful
okay.
means
Doctor,
you have.
But how do you read today, let's say, the failure of countries, of different countries, interfered in the Syrian crisis under the pretext of protecting human rights and also solving the stalemate inside, the Syrian stalemate? How do you read the failure of these countries that interfere to resolve Syrian crisis? 22 months have passed, several envoys and even monitors have been sent to the Syrian ground, and still no solution for the case. The question is that what is halting them from actually continuing this path till the end?
Well, because now the Syrians, what so-called opposition, and also some groups in Syria, they felt that they cannot topple the regime.
Yes.
First. Second, in terms of the international game, mm-hmm. they have to get at least a consent from Russia and China mm-hmm. and powerful regional countries like Iran.
Okay.
And also they know that there are other players in this region, not the Americans or the Saudis and mm-hmm. the Qataris and the Turks. They thought, they really delusion that they can impose kind of solution in Syria
yes.
To topple the regime or to kick out the regime.
And they
Bashar
tried several
Assad.
Times send
they
monitors
tried. They
and
tried. So they failed. They failed.
Yes.
I guess because
the
Syrians, the majority of the Syrians and the majority, the great majority of the army, United Army in mm-hmm. Syria, they really protected themselves and the regime and Syria in spite of all these losses
yes.
in the lives of the in the army, in the individuals and in the buildings and in the territories. They really lost a lot of things, but mm. they kept the unity of Syrian borders and territories under the protection of the sole legitimate army in Syria, the Syrian army.
Yes.
And because of this, and because of the help of Russia and Iran and China mm-hmm. and the free people
this
who
this kind
knew,
of cohesion
yeah,
with the Syrian
and they regime. Knew that these countries, the United States, are not looking for freedom and looking for democracy. Neither the Qataris or the Saudis,
yes.
because they can't really defend this argument mm-hmm. and say, well, we have our premises, we have our values to give to the others. They don't have. They, on the contrary,
mm-hmm.
they have to ruin other countries. That's what they have done. They try to ruin Lebanon, try to really exercise all kinds of power in Lebanon and mm. the pressure and through planes and through aggression. And that's why the Israelis and
okay.
the Americans are not satisfied with these results. But to say one thing, that Syria, now they are sure that Syria is not so powerful as yes. it used to be.
Okay.
That's probably might help, might encourage them to tell, okay, enough losses in the lives and in the properties okay. in Syria, mm-hmm. let's go into another kind of dialogue, and that will take time also.
Okay.
To
we will be discussing more. We will be discussing more about the Syrian ground. We will take a short break today's episode. Dear viewers, a break, and we will be right back. Welcome back. Dr. Mohsen, despite Qatar and Saudi Arabia and also the rest of the Persian Gulf countries' involvement in Syria, we now witness, and shockingly, an Israeli involvement in the Syrian unrest. As, of course, we've heard what happened lately. As diplomats, Syrian rebels and security sources say Israeli jets bombed a convoy near the Lebanese border, apparently hitting weapons destined for Hezbollah, as they claimed from their own position. What does the Israeli intervention in Syria initially mean to you, Doctor, today?
Well, we know that the Israelis, the Israeli as a
Was
state, as an army,
mm-hmm.
they get used on habitus to have aggression anytime they want and without or regardless of all the resolutions from the United Nations
yes.
or from other countries. I guess the Israelis want to say we are here for two things. For internal reasons, mm-hmm. Netanyahu is a weak prime minister. He wants to tell the Americans and the Israelis that I am here, I can go and bomb this country and that country, this target or that, but still they have a problem in defending this kind of aggression, because that's why they the Russian, the Chinese, many countries, and of course Iran, in solidarity with Syria, Mr. Jalili came to Damascus and mm-hmm. sat with the foreign minister and mm-hmm. with also President Assad,
mm-hmm.
and they declared that they are having good relations and strategic relations
mm-hmm.
with Syria.
Mm-hmm.
They will try, and they said the Israelis will repent such an aggression against Syria. However, I would say we are having a war here.
Yes.
Sometimes it is silent in terms of security, and
mm-hmm.
sometimes in terms of some of the arms,
yes. So we can say that
directed to the resistance. But anyhow,
we can say
we
that
have
the Israeli
no
took advantage of what's happening inside Syria for the attack.
Probably, but I'm not sure if they really, because no intelligence reports about really what the Israelis bombed in Syria,
or on
the road from mm-hmm. Damascus to
okay.
Lebanon.
Yes.
We don't have real information, and
mm-hmm.
I've read many reports from the Americans. They talk about this scientific center or research center,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes they talk about these missiles to the resistance in Lebanon.
Yes, Ehud Barak, though, Israeli defense minister, he actually highlighted
that
he was behind the strike.
Yeah,
could it be
true.
That the
but
Israeli
we don't
strike
know
proves
the aim? The
for sure.
No.
Could it be that the Israeli strikes proves that the military approach against Assad has reached a dead end point, and that's why Israel is involved here?
The Israelis are involved. They know that the relation and the very warm relation with the resistance
mm-hmm.
and the regime in Syria,
yes.
not because of the regime, because mm-hmm. of the common action
mm-hmm.
against the regime, against the Israeli the Israeli occupation to Palestine, yes, and to Golan and to South Lebanon and all these things. They know this kind having a very organic and instrumental also purposes in this relation between the resistance and Syria and the leadership in Syria and the army in Syria. So this kind of relationship won't end by a kind of bombardment to this bus or to this center or to this place or to that. It won't end.
Okay.
It will continue.
Yes.
And they know that this alliance and this access from Tehran to Lebanon to Damascus is very strong and imposing a kind of new strategies in the region, and we'll see the fruits of such alliance in the future, because Syria is going to continue its battle against the American and the Israeli plans in the region. Some Arabs are really maneuvering and bluffed, and they went on with this kind of plans, but they will also remove such steps because they are not up to it.
Yes.
They are not the people to the job.
Mm-hmm.
They are weak enough in order to do such role. That's why the Americans are trying to emphasize the protection of their allies, what so-called allies, instruments, in fact, Qatar and Saudi Arabia and some other countries.
Syrian Defense Minister General Fahad Jassim Al-Fresh said that Israel attacked the research center because rebels were unable to capture it, the rebels inside Syria. And he called the rebels Israelis' tools. Now, Assad also said that the raid en masse, the true role that Israel is playing, he said in collaboration with foreign enemy forces and their agents on Syrian soil. He added, this exposes the true role that Israel is playing in cooperation with hostile foreign forces and their proxies in Syria. So do you agree here with the Syrian government analysis of the Israeli interference inside the case, that Israel actually is occupying or even giving equipments to these foreign proxies, as he highlighted, and because they were unable to continue the mission, Israel interfered. So there is kind of this cooperation between these foreigners, foreign proxies that are involved inside Syria, and the Israeli government.
Well, I guess he is, as a defense minister in Syria, knows what is going on.
Yes.
And I guess he is trying to have a kind of description to the situation.
Or analysis,
and,
at least.
And no, he knew that many of these armed groups in Syria tried to take many such strategic places like this center, and try also to reach also to the to his ministry. But they failed to do so. Of course, the Israelis, I guess they both have a kind of common strategy to topple the regime.
Yes.
And above all, they have to try to weaken the mentality of resistance in this regime and in the people around the regime, especially the great officers in the defense ministry, and they want to try to break down this solidarity between the regime and the army. And I guess one of these games is over now.
Yes.
Especially the army is stayed and remained united, strong, tough, and know what is going on. So when he's describing this attack, this aggression from the Israelis as a kind of help to the opposition
and cooperation with the opposition
or help to to the opposition, I guess it is applicable. It is possible that the Israelis, because the Americans and the Europeans, and once we know that President Assad asked these terrorists to put down their arms and surrender to the regime, and they will be freed and will be treated in a very justifiable way.
Yes.
But Hillary Clinton that day said, "Don't give up your arms to the to the regime." Mm-hmm. But now the situation has been changed, probably not from the last failure to surround Damascus and take some of the important points.
Okay, Dr. Israeli Defense Minister Ehud Barak acknowledged, and for the first time from the security conference in Munich, that Israel had carried out the strike, and that he said the January 30 attack is another proof that when we say something, we mean it. We say that we don't think it should be allowable to bring advanced weapon systems to Lebanon, into Lebanon, to Hezbollah from Syria when Assad falls. Mr. Barak gave no further details about the attack, only what he mentioned. How do you read his confession, first of all, towards the attack that happened in January 30, and that he supported and backed, and is he like supported here and backed by superpowers for him to have this confidence in declaring that kind of movement that is clearly a breach for international law?
Well, that's true. They are above the international law. Nobody, does not know such data or such an information that Israel is the only country in the whole world does not fulfill or does not implement any of the United Nations resolution so far.
So here, Doctor, the message was not
this is,
to
this
Syria,
is
the
one,
message.
This
yes.
is one. Second, this, well, Ehud Barak is the war minister. He knows that he will try to do something, but the resistance and Syria, and they will also retaliate. Probably not now, not tomorrow, but they will retaliate.
Okay.
And they know that they are the only, the resistance in Lebanon and Syria and of course Iran and Palestinians in Gaza, they are the only parties, the only teams that they are trying to regain or liberate the occupied territories in Golan and in in Palestine. But we should talk, we should have some remarks here or some notes that it is it right for the Americans to help or not to help to arm the Israelis and the Syrians do not have the right to help the resistance in Lebanon? This is one question. The other question is for the international. Who is occupying the other's lands? The Israelis or the Syrians?
Yes.
So the Syrians are prevented from
but the Israelis
helping
said it's for self-defense
from,
matter.
That's not self-defense. That's an aggression. Their existence is an aggression. By itself, when you bring these people from all over the world, from Poland, from Germany, from
Africa.
Europe to Palestine, and build new settlements, and one of the problems now for this government are the settlements.
Yes.
One of these things is the settlements.
Yeah, that's a major challenge.
And,
yeah,
and the Americans and the Europeans, they know that they are violating all resolutions of the United and the humanitarian, and these doors of freedom and doors the villages of freedoms, and they the Israelis are ruining every day a new village for freedom or a new door for freedom in the West Bank. So they can't, the Israelis can't claim that this has the right to do so or that has the right to do so or not to do so. The Israelis cannot really give lessons in freedom of doing.
Yes.
They are the doers of all kinds of satanic deeds mm-hmm. in this region.
Okay.
Against the Palestinians, against the Lebanese, against
the
Syrians.
To the point of resistance in the region. In addition to what we just said, Doctor, Israel is reportedly planning to set up a buffer zone along its border with Syria to guard against Islamist fighters. How do you read that? Is that enough explanation of what Syrian defense minister was trying to actually explain about the Israelis' involvement inside Syria, that they are cooperating with these extremists, foreign extremist proxies that are entering into Syria and causing an unrest? And the proof here is that it is planning to set up a buffer zone along its border with Syria under the pretext to guard against Islamist fighters. So how do you read that?
I really don't know. I read this analysis and I'm not convinced that the Israelis can or are able mm-hmm. to do such thing, or there is another power might join them in doing such a buffer zone.
Yes.
Because all these gangs or these groups from the northern part on the borders of Turkey, and they tried to do such buffer zone, mm-hmm. or before from Dar'a on the borders of Jordan, they could not do so. Mm-hmm. But I guess the Israelis could do such thing. I don't think so.
Okay.
Especially if after 2 years of fight, the Syrians were really powerful enough in order to show that these buffer zones are a red line, and the Russians would not allow anybody to do such thing or to use Patriot missiles or anything against Syria.
We will take a final break in today's episode. Dear viewers, stay tuned. Welcome back. Doctor, if you wanted to take a little bit of a look on the aftermath of the Israeli airstrike, how various countries have been responding to this attack. Shockingly, actually, Turkish Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan has accused Israel of waging a state terrorism, as he condemned the airstrike on Syria as an unacceptable violation of international law. And he said those who have been treating Israel like a spoiled child should expect anything from them at any time. And he also said we cannot regard the violation of airspace as acceptable. What Israel does is completely against international law. It is beyond condemnation. How can one actually analyze this contradictive double stances of Turkey? I mean, isn't sending extremists into Syria to fight a war that Syrians should be actually defending and Syrians should be actually solving, isn't that by itself is a breach to international law, as long as Turkish Prime Minister is criticizing Israel on that task?
This is a kind of, let's just say, buying a kind of position mm-hmm. with the Arabs and with the Syrians, with people,
yes.
public. This is a public statement. Mm-hmm. It is not really reflecting the political attitude of Erdogan. Mm-hmm. Erdogan want to avenge from the Israelis because they did not apologize to him after Marmara massacres.
Yes.
Because the Israelis killed Turks and mm-hmm. he did not do anything.
Yes.
On the contrary, he probably deepened the economic and the trade relationship between Israel and Turkey. Mm-hmm. The real position would have been for Erdogan is to say no for any kinds of intervention from outside mm-hmm. in Syria, and not allowing the armed groups to go into Syria from the Turkish borders, and not trying to topple the regime because intervening in Syria mm-hmm. while still Turkey is really having internal problems because of this. And he really betrayed all kinds of relations with Syria and Erdogan and his party, and also have a kind of a treacherous planning against Syria and against the resistance in Lebanon.
Okay.
That's why, because this is This is not, this statement is a joke. Mm-hmm. It's not a serious statement against Israel. Otherwise, he would not have brought the Patriot and asked the NATO to fix Patriot dome on the borders.
Muscles, yes.
Yeah, and also the other arms of mm-hmm. the Atlantic of the air. Yeah. So this is a kind of really a fake statement against Israel. I would not really buy it.
Okay. A Syrian opposition leader, Al-Khatib, urged Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's government on Monday, and also from the Munich Security Conference, to start talks for its departure from power and save the country from greater ruin after almost 2 years of bloodshed. And here I quote, "I asked the regime to send Farouk al-Sharaa if it accepts the idea and we can sit with him." What made Al-Khatib reach to such a solution, Dr. Mohsen? Is it due to lack of suitable solutions in the Syrian ground? I mean, Bashar al-Assad tried so hard for long to actually call the opposition for a dialogue. And of course, their answer was negative most of the time. Now, what made Al-Khatib reach to a conclusion that now it's time to actually negotiate and sit on the table with Bashar al-Assad, or even with, he said here, with Farouk al-Sharaa, that's what he's asking, in order to solve the Syrian crisis?
First and foremost, I guess political circumstances have been changed. Mm-hmm. And after Barack Obama's winning of the new term mm-hmm. in the White House, I guess now there's another political spirit between the relationship between Russia and the United States.
Okay.
And I guess who brought these people are the Western powers and mm-hmm. the United States. And Hillary Clinton imposed Mu'adh al-Khatib on the head of this coalition.
Yes.
And some of the opposition figures or men or, well, puppets, they disagreed with Ma'ad al-Khatib. Mm-hmm. However, I would say mm-hmm. the president or the secretary of the Syrian coalition would really like to go into dialogue mm-hmm. for many reasons, because they lost the battle. Mm-hmm. They lost the war against the regime. It's simple like this.
Yes.
The other thing is that they
the
don't have any right, to choose
al-Sharaa,
or other. The regime yes. has the right to choose mm-hmm. the negotiator or the locator to the mm-hmm. to any conference.
Yes.
But I guess it is early to talk about the people who are leading the dialogue.
Yes.
Because, first of all, these parties, the coalition parties, they have to meet in Cairo in order to determine they will go to dialogue or not.
Mm-hmm.
Is he expressing his individual private opinion, or that's the opposition mm-hmm. opinion?
Okay.
And the Syrians have to really consult with Lavrov and Salih, because Ma'ad al-Khatib met with Salih and Lavrov.
Yes.
And to what extent these negotiations were fruitful in terms of the dialogue and the strategy for dialogue and the process that would entail a kind of fruitful and positive mm-hmm. Results reflect itself on the situation in Syria, inside Syria,
mm-hmm.
that would have to take some time, first, and second, would bring some of the oppositions like Haytham Manna and Ma'ad al-Khatib and these people
mm-hmm.
into not only Sharaa, but also there are other factions in Syria inside the regime, from the people who join really the last government in Syria, also from the opposition, were
yes.
opposing the regime, but
to some, they have some demands, they met, and they are like Ali Haider from other groups, Syrian party, and what's his name also, the deputy of mm-hmm. the prime minister, mm-hmm. Jamil Qadri, and other, they have to also go into the negotiations or the dialogue, whether in Syria or in, well, the Syrians proposed Cairo. Cairo is probably a good place, mm-hmm. On one condition, that mm-hmm. Nabil Arabi and others should not have any kind of intervention in this dialogue. Otherwise, they will bother everything. They mm-hmm. will really ruin everything.
And now, on the other hand, as you mentioned, a very important point, the moderate Islamist preacher announced last week he was prepared to talk to Assad's representatives, although he set several conditions. But this move broke a taboo on the opposition contacts with Damascus, dismayed some in his own opposition coalition, and angered many in its rank who insist on Assad's departure as precondition for negotiation. Here, how do you view the split? Among opposition, and why is Al-Khatib insisting, despite the split that happened in the opposition upon Al-Khatib's request for a dialogue, on moving on despite agreement among opposition groups? Agreement.
First of all, the regime in Syria mm-hmm. and Russia, they said, well, any kind of dialogue should be without preconditions. Yes. No step down for the president or for any of the president's positions, mm-hmm. minister or other positions to step down. These are unacceptable mm-hmm. from the Russians and the Iranians and the Syrians. So let's put down this. Finished. This is finished.
Okay.
Because even on the ground, in the battlefield, they lost. Mm-hmm. So they have to come to dialogue or in order to put a kind of agenda or a kind of, map mm-hmm. for reaching a kind of reforms. Mm-hmm. These reforms should go into a new government, interim government, may really give all the teams or the parties a kind of share in this government in order to continue the reformation period. And then until 2014, when the presidential election will come mm-hmm. at that time, probably everybody have the right to go into that race and through a democratic process, and probably anyone who wins the election might mm-hmm. be in the presidency or in control in Syria. But before that time, the dialogue should really should not be preceded by any kind of conditions.
Okay. Doctor, do you think that Mr. Khatib himself is engaging in these talks with the backing of the USA, with the backing of some countries that are against these talks with Iran and even Russia?
Well, the Russians said it clearly that the Iranians and the Saudis should join the Geneva II mm-hmm. conference in order to put the ground, to put the basics for the departure of the dialogue,
yes.
the future dialogue. And I guess the Americans are really lenient to such new equation of the relationship mm-hmm. because as you heard Joe Biden call for a dialogue with Iran, direct mm-hmm. dialogue with Iran.
Yeah.
This is a sign.
Okay.
Also, they told Al-Khatib to continue in this initiation.
Okay, so that means, are you optimistic about the security conference in Munich?
There are signs might make us or make any individual who really watch, observe the the statements from Biden and from Lavrov and from Salihi also,
yes,
and Al-Khatib to be more optimistic than before.
Hopefully.
And
unfortunately, our time is up. Dr. Mohsen Saleh, political analyst, thank you very much for this analysis.
Thank you
for joining us. Dear viewers, that's all the time that we have. Thanks for watching. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.